Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello there, welcome to a brand new Arse Blog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. Hope you're well. I'm okay, thanks. At this very moment though, I'm struggling. I'm unsure as to what is going on. I'll try and explain it to you. I think somewhere in the foam bit of my microphone, there is a dog hair from Archer, the German Shepherd. It's stuck somewhere, and when I'm sitting here at the microphone, it's in my peripheral vision. I can see it. It's wobbling around to the sound of my voice. However, when I move back from the microphone, I can't find it. It's just nowhere. I don't know what it is, whether it's an invisible hair. The other thing I'm thinking of is that it could be in my eye. And that makes me go like, because I hate the idea of something being in my eye. It's gross. Last week, I got a fly in my eye. I was cycling along, and this fly had the whole fucking sky everywhere, like the whole of the sky he's got to fly along in, but no, he has to fly into my eye. And I was trying to cycle along a busy road doing that weird blinking thing that you're doing, and then I rubbed my eye, and then it was even more blinky, so I had to sort of pull in and eventually like scrape fly guts, because there was nothing left of the fly at that point, out of my eye and onto my finger, and it was only like, I don't know, two-thirds of the fly. So my eye consumed the rest of the fly, and it's like, horrible. Fucking fly asshole. So I'm hoping that this thing is in the foam and I just can't see it. But if it's in my eye, I could possibly freak out. Because, you know, it could travel around the back of my eye then and go into my somewhere that's connected to your eye and then into my brain and just fester there. And then one day I'll wake up and I won't be able to say words. Or the words will just come out backwards or wrong or something like that. It's my big fear, it really is. But anyway, aside from that, I'm okay. I hope you're well. Because it has been, well, you might just say it's been a reasonably good week for us in terms of football, right? I mean, we've had worse. After the interlull, we beat Watford 3-0. That was good. Clean sheet away from home. It's pretty good. Moved us back into second place in the table. And then, of course, we had this game against Bayern Munich on Tuesday in the Champions League. And Bayern Munich, you know, they're good. They're quite good at football. They seem to have practiced together more than once. There was a modicum of understanding between them, you might say. And they have been very, very good, obviously, winning the Bundesliga for the last, I don't know, couple of decades. Apart from when Klopp did it. There's the hair. I can't see it. Where the fuck is it? God damn it. Anyway, Bayern Munich, they were good. They were good. Came into this game on the back of 12 straight wins. We weren't quite so in form as that. On our European form, well, you know, it's been shit. But football is funny, right? You just don't know what's going to happen. And then we won. And it was great. So we're all happy. And that's the end of this week's Arsecast. Thank you for listening. I'll catch you on the next one. Should probably go a bit more in depth than that, right? I think we will. It was a fantastic win. And a win that I hope sparks something in the team. Particularly on the back of the Manchester United one as well. Because those are two difficult opponents. Scored 5 goals, conceded none. Played very, very well in both games. And played very, very well in different ways. In the United game, we went out what did we go out like? I don't know. I was going to say a ton of bricks. That's not what we went out like. We started very, very brightly. I think I'll say that. Rather than try and find some kind of simile or metaphor for what we did, we played very well in the early stages of the game. bossed the first half completely, scored three goals early, and then sat on it and saw out the second half very well. This time we had to withstand Bayern Munich, who like to pass the ball around. They do. I mean, they pass it, and they pass it, and they pass it from one side and to another, and then they keep it, and they pass it, and they've got some good players, some tricky players. That Douglas Costa. Douglas is not exactly the name I would associate with a top footballer, but he was really good, and he was dangerous. And, you know, when you've got Lewandowski, and when you've got Müller, and when you've got Thiago, and when you've got all the guys that they have, you really have to be 100% switched on. And for the most part, we were. There were a couple of moments, of course, where things didn't quite go as well as we would have liked. That early moment in the 30 seconds in, and Lewandowski picks up the ball and goes charging towards our area. And you're thinking, just kick him, kick him, kick him, kick him now, kick him now, kick him now. It's getting too late. Now you can't kick him. He's in the area. Someone stop. Whew. Okay. That would have made our start very, very difficult indeed. Had we, you know, done an Arsenal there and conceded so early. But we grew into the game. We defended very well from front to back, I thought, but particularly the back. Petr Cech, outstanding. What a great game he had. Centre halves were great. Fullbacks, whew, it's amazing. Nacho Monreal, I love him. He's brilliant. It's just fantastic to watch at the moment. Hector Bellerin, huh, my goodness. I mean, I don't want to say that I'm in any way happy that Mathieu Debuchy got injured, because I wouldn't wish that on an Arsenal player. Not really. Certainly none of the ones in this team, anyway. But my point is this, that without the injuries, Hector Bellerin probably would have gone on loan last season. True. He was thinking about going on loan. The club were thinking about letting him go on loan because we had Debuchy. We just signed for £12 million from Newcastle. The replacement for Bakary Sagna, Callum Chambers, despite the way his season sort of finished, he'd started it quite brightly and had played relatively well at right back. So if Debuchy hadn't turned his ankle that time and then been pushed into the advertising hoardings by that snide Stoke guy, Arnautovic, and dislocated his shoulder, you know, might have been very... We might not have Hector now. Or Hector's career would not have been as advanced. And the fortuitousness of that, or the timeliness of that, you know, in some ways, you've got to give the guy absolute credit for taking his chance the way that he did when he was given the opportunity in the team. But it's not always that a player is given that opportunity. The best laid plans of any football manager can be laid bare by injury or suspension. And a guy that you think perhaps isn't going to have an impact in the team, all of a sudden he becomes a crucial part of it. I mean, we've seen it twice now. With Coquelin and Hector Bellerin. But he was just brilliant. Where did he get that pace from? In the 93rd minute. A, the awareness. B, the fact that at that stage of the game, you could forgive him for being a little reticent or being on his heels, making sure that he defended well. But no, he was on his toes, saw that the pass was left a bit short. He zoomed in, pushed it past the defender, zoomed past the defender. Pew, pew, pew. He was like... And then crosses for Mesut Ozil to score. Just about score. But amazing. He's just so fantastic to watch. And it's great to see stories like that, isn't it? Because people get so invested in transfers and spending big money on players. And I get it completely. I understand it 100%. It's great when you sign a player. It's great when you sign a big-name player. It's great when you spend a lot of money and that player turns out to be really good. But it's also fucking great when someone like Bellerin or Coquelin comes along and has the same kind of impact. Okay, maybe not so much because the big money is spent on forward players, but Coquelin and Bellerin, brilliant. Just great stories. You know, it's thoroughly enjoyable and it kind of keeps that part of football alive a bit. That not every team has to be built through huge spending. So I enjoyed that. And obviously I enjoyed the fact that we beat Bayern Munich 2-0. Keeping our Champions League hopes alive, who knows where it might go? I don't know. But you've got to look at results like this and think of the benefits beyond the 3 points that you get in a Champions League campaign. You know, you've got to look at how you've beaten the best team in Europe, basically. That gives you confidence and belief. We've beaten big teams this season. We're going to talk about that now in a moment, but we've beaten Bayern Munich And from that, we should take a lot. I don't think it's very far wide of the mark that Arsene Wenger was talking about consistency a couple of weeks ago. That was the challenge for his team. It's not necessarily quality, because we've seen them beat big teams in 2015. And that was an issue. That was something we couldn't do. We've done that. Now it's consistency. It's finding the overall performance against Bayern Munich and also against teams who don't necessarily have that kind of stature. The same approach, the same commitment, the same motivation. That's where we got to find our thing. But look, overall, thoroughly enjoyable to play like that, to win like that, to see the players come together like that. Great atmosphere. Perfect. That's what you need. Now do it again and again and again and again and so on. But look, why don't we talk about this game a little bit more? Because I think we should. We should live it a bit more because, you know, it doesn't happen very often that you have a big night like that in Europe. It certainly hasn't happened often this season. So let's chat about it a bit more with our guest this week. Always delighted to welcome back to the Arsecast, Amy Lawrence. Hi, Amy.
Hello, Andrew.
We should start with that small event on Tuesday night, I guess. The 2-0 win over Bayern Munich. Arsenal had to win to keep the Champions League hopes alive. And they did, and it was great.
Do you know what was interesting? At the beginning, and I watched the game in the crowd rather than on a work position. Mm. And in the first couple of minutes, I sort of looked around and noticed that there wasn't that sort of huge, edgy tension that you get with a massive game. So I think a lot of people went with quite low expectations. And because of that, it created a quite different dynamic to that time when you can sense the nervousness of the crowd, and I think that sometimes spreads through to the players. There was just a sort of slightly almost relaxed atmosphere at the beginning of the game. Mm. Not from the players, I might add. I think that the level of concentration that they showed was remarkable, which they needed to show to sort of deal with that Bayern passing style. I mean, was a weird sense of probably imagining what sometimes it feels for other teams that play against Arsenal when Arsenal do that passing thing for ages and ages and ages, and they're just trying to hang on and see if they might get something on the break. It was sort of a strange inverse of what sometimes happens to Arsenal. Yeah. But just going back to this atmosphere in the crowd, I think it was quite helpful in a way, because it just didn't have that same sense of, even though it was a must win, I don't think people went there with the kind of knots in your stomach type of, I think I might go through hell if this all goes wrong sense. And therefore, when it all started to go, you know, quite well, and particularly when the goal came, there was this sort of explosion of real unexpected bonus territory pleasure. Which is what made for, I think a lot of people have said, it was the last quarter of an hour or so, the ground was rocking like it doesn't normally.
Yeah.
So that kind of added to the whole sense of the event, I think, apart from obviously what went on the pitch.
Yeah, and you talked about concentration and discipline and organisation, and when you're playing a team like, I was going to say Barcelona there, because I mean it was like playing Barcelona to a certain extent, obviously because of the Guardiola connection. But that kind of relentless passing, and you're under the cosh. And there were moments when we did get the ball back, perhaps maybe in the first 20, 25 minutes, where we tried to do too much too quickly with it. I guess the plan was to try and catch them on the break and to use the pace of Walcott. But it does take a huge, huge amount of discipline and concentration. And I think maybe the last time you were on, we spoke about having people like Petr Cech and Per Mertesacker in the team, these experienced heads who have been there and done that, and who can even subliminally spread this kind of calm throughout the team. And I think that was quite evident on Tuesday as well.
Yeah, and I think in some ways you probably feel some human sympathy for Ospina, in that there's such an obvious contrast between the feelings at the end of the Olympiakos game and the feelings at the end of the Bayern game, and the fact that the performance of the goalkeepers in those two games seemed to spread an incredibly big sense of what was going on generally. And I think that was where that was the game. Czech's been, apart from the first game against West Ham, really very, very good. Quite quietly, because there's, funny enough, not been that much sort of almost hype, really, once. Perhaps that was because of what happened in the opening game against West Ham, and it just changed people's expectations slightly. But certainly in the last three or four games, I mean, three clean sheets in a row with the Man United game and then Watford and Bayern, he spreads this calmness that is reminiscent, I think, of David Seaman. And that idea that the defence just has that little extra security blanket that I think can allow them to relax more than they would do if they have a keeper they're not quite so confident in.
Yeah.
It was very evident.
As was his quality, though, in terms of the saves that he made. I mean, the one that he made from Lewandowski just 90 seconds before we actually scored. I mean, that's as big a save as you can expect any goalkeeper to make.
And in such a big game, you're talking about what was defined as an absolute last chance saloon must-win Champions League game.
Yeah.
To pull off a save like that at 0-0 at home, knowing how things would have gone if that had gone in. It's just a testament to the qualities that Arsenal brought in. And you talk about his connection with Mertz. I think there's something that you could argue. I mean, Arsene Wenger gets and has got over the years lots of stick for the defensive-minded element of what he does and this perception that he doesn't do defending. And I think everybody acknowledges that he'd much rather do attacking. But after the Bayern game, it occurred to me that it looked like suddenly all the pieces were in place, that he's really built another great defence. Obviously, when he arrived with the old Arsenal back four, left by George Graham, it was a gift from God, so to speak, for any manager. And then to sort of remould the entire back line for the invincible season. But really, when you look at the way that obviously Koscielny and Mertesacker have this fantastic sort of brotherhood almost in the way that they play and their telepathic sort of understanding and way of helping each other out and complementing each other. Monreal has evolved into possibly the best left back in the league, consistency wise for sure. Bellerin is astounding in his development for his age. And then you have Coquelin in front and Cech behind. And all of a sudden, as a kind of whole unit, with the back four, the goalie and the defensive midfield player, and you could add the intelligence of Cazorla alongside that and the work that he does, suddenly you think, well, this is a really great defence.
There's a platform.
Probably the manager deserves more credit than that than he might get.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he is criticised for, and he has made some very dodgy decisions and purchases in those areas, but every single one of those players, he's brought into the club. Some of them unknown, Monreal and Koscielny in particular, and he's given a brilliant chance to someone like Bellerin. And just before we started, I was talking about the timing issue, and that, you know, if, for example, Mathieu Debuchy hadn't become injured last season, he probably would have consolidated his position as the number one right back. And if Ramsey and Wilshere and Arteta and Flamini hadn't got injured last season, Coquelin, who knows where he might be now. So there's a nice part of timing and how football can offer up these nice surprises in a world of 50-80 million pound signings. These guys can be just as effective.
Well, these are the sliding doors moments in football, aren't they? And I went along in the afternoon before the Bayern game to see Arsenal against Bayern at under 19 level in the UEFA Youth League, which is effectively the junior Champions League that they've started running. And you look at one or two of the players coming through that age group. Iwobi scored a couple of great goals, and he obviously made his impression in pre-season as well. There's a couple, Jeff, who I know you've got a fondness for. Who's out in Chile with Chris Willock as well for England and various others. Dan Crowley on loan, Zella Lem on loan. These are all of that age group, sort of, you know, the next generation that you might wonder if one or two will come through. And looking at them, you can't help wondering again, unless it's something that's exceptional of say a Fabregas coming through where Arsene Wenger looks at a kid of 17 and thinks, well, I'm finding room for you, full stop, or an Elka or whoever.
Yeah.
For the rest of them who have that potential, possibly, it might well come down to a sliding doors moment such as led to Coquelin and Bellerin getting that chance to and that exposure to show what they can do on the biggest stage consistently. Mm.
We could call it a Silvino's passport moment, perhaps.
We could.
We might come back to the youth thing now in a minute, because I know you're at that game and wrote a very good piece about it during the week, so I'll come back to that. But what we've seen in 2015 from Arsenal since that Manchester City game when they went away and changed tactically, the game plan was different for a big away game, necessity being the mother of invention perhaps, but since then Arsenal's record in the big games has improved. I know we lost to Chelsea, but there were other factors involved there. So there's, you know, wins over Manchester United in the league and in the FA Cup, win over Tottenham in the Capital One Cup. You know, we've beaten Bayern Munich, we've beaten Liverpool comprehensively. And from time to time, it feels like the players can't match the preparation or motivation for the so-called lesser games, you might say. So is the challenge now, having built this platform, built this back four and a good goalkeeper, and spinally, you might say, we're as strong as we have been in quite a while, is the challenge now to be able to almost tap into the player's subconscious? Because I don't believe that they switch off or they don't take games seriously on purpose. I just think there's a natural inclination to look at some opponents as more difficult than others, and you tend to up your game a little bit. So is the challenge now to try and replicate that in all the games?
You know, in some ways it sounds ridiculous, but the biggest challenge that Arsenal face over these next few weeks is just fitness. Mm. It's about keeping that core 11 plus the 5 or 6 sort of best stand-ins fit and at the top of their game physically as well as mentally. And that's the huge risk. You know, everybody knows that if something happens to Sanchez or something happens to Coquelin, you know, those particular positions where there really isn't somebody particularly to step in. Even if something happens to Cech, I think that's very much the case as well. That's going to be the critical probably element to how far this team can go, because they now know that they can tackle various different types of challenges. They're not going to win every game, because no team ever does. Bayern Munich were pretty close, let's be honest, coming up to game in midweek, and they're a fine football team, Bayern. And I think one of the things that was amazing about that match, when you're looking at the way Arsenal handled it, was you talk about the discipline and concentration they needed, it also needed a lot of courage. To say, we're going to let you have the ball for that amount of time.
Mm.
Lots of people were going, close them down. People all around were screaming, like, press, get into them. And there was this sense of, like, people couldn't quite fathom, and it's totally understandable, why Arsenal appeared to be letting Bayern Munich have all the time in the world to put their pass. And for a team as good at passing as they are, it felt incredibly risky territory. But it did appear to be part of the master plan. You look at the way they approached the Man United game, where Arsenal were totally on the front foot, and it was about the sort of blitz of the first 20-odd minutes or so, which set up that platform, and then being able to hold on to that. The game at Leicester was a completely different type of game, where it was, all-out attack, we'll outscore, another very attacking team. The Watford one was about being very, very patient, and wearing down the opposition, and then having the intelligence and the energy to do the damage at the end. And then obviously the Bayern game was about this kind of almost counterintuitive letting a great team have all the ball. I think Arsenal felt confident enough in their defensive concentration that if they effectively stopped it from getting to Lewandowski, that they felt that they could pass more or less as much as they wanted. Whether that's got a lot to do with the fact that obviously players like Robin and Ribery were absent, and it might have needed a different game plan if there was a sense that Bayern had more finishers in their makeup, might have been different. But it looked like it was a perfect plan, perfectly executed. but previous games have shown different plans. So that's quite an interesting thing that Arsenal have seemed to have added to their own resources. Sure. Because for years people have, in some ways quite rightly, said Arsenal are plan A and nothing else. And now there seems to be just a few variations to that plan.
How do we look at Olivier Giroud and his contribution recently? If we talk about Arsenal having a plan B, he has kind of been a plan B. And I don't mean in the sense that he's been chucked on with desperation, because that hasn't been the case, really. But when he has come off the bench, he's scoring with decent regularity. Is it down to him being a bit fresher? Because I think he's one of those guys that when he is physically fresh, he's much more dangerous. There have been times when he's been played to the point where his effectiveness has been blunted. But, you know, coming off the bench, obviously he's not as tired. He's maybe taking advantage of slightly tired opposition. But on top of that, his response as a player to losing his place to Theo Walcott has been fantastic.
Yeah, creditable. I don't know what he thinks when he's at home, but publicly he's not complained. He's just vowed to get his head down and work to do his part for the team. It would be really interesting to have the kind of conversation. It often happens with older players where they get towards the end of their career and a manager more or less has to sit them down and say, right, things are going to be a bit different now. You're still incredibly valuable. Mm. But you might not be starting every game. You'll still get plenty of games, you'll still get plenty of starts, and you'll still get plenty of action from the bench. But the way you're going to be played and the status, if you like, that you have within the team is slightly different. Wenger is a master at making everyone in the squad, even the bit part players, feel involved, very much part of everything, and wants them to feel ready and committed whenever they're called upon. That's something that the great successful teams of the past, the players all noted that, how important it was that if somebody was out injured, that the player coming in didn't feel like, oh, well, it's just my turn because so-and-so's injured, but was really up for it and felt included all the way through the season. I can't imagine that Wenger will be having that conversation with Giroud, but there is an element to say maybe this is what he has to adapt to slightly in his own expectations. But if he takes it the right way, he can still be a hugely effective player for Arsenal. I mean, obviously coming off the bench, it looks like he's a fantastic super sub. Mm. I'm sure that tiring defenders would not want him coming on in the last 15 minutes of a game to face, especially if you've been facing a quite different kind of challenge previously. With Walcott and Sanchez, and the different kind of game that goes on with that being more of the attacking focal point. But I'd be amazed if he didn't still get a pretty healthy amount of starts this season. It may well be there'd be certain games that Arsene selects him in because he just thinks that physical power is needed, or height for defending set pieces is needed, and so on. And you know, Walcott might not necessarily be fit and in the cycle of scoring every match as well. So it's all a bit, it is a quite healthy competition in a way, because although I think it looks like Walcott's edged in front at the moment, I don't think it's that clearly defined yet. So keeping them both highly motivated and hungry, and if they're both scoring goals and some start and some the other time you come on, it's not that terrible a situation.
No, I mean, I agree with you there, and I don't think Walcott has got it nailed down, but I think what's interesting is that so far this season we've seen perhaps Walcott has added a little extra dimension to his game, so that if you are, for example, having to bring him on late in a game when you are trying to get a goal and you're playing against a packed defence, typically you would say that was not his strength, because getting in behind and using his pace has always been where he's best. But this season he has shown that he's capable of popping up in the penalty area even if there's plenty of people in there.
Yeah, and I think what probably gives him the edge at the moment is in recent games, it feels like a faster Arsenal when Walcott is leading the line. Mm. Just feels like there's a bit more fizz and zip about the whole way that the team move the ball. You know, Arsene said it the other day anyway. He said, look, we have to play a certain way when Walcott's playing. When Giroud is playing, we have the option of going in the air, which we just don't have when Walcott's on the pitch. Mm. or not or in that centre-forward role. So it just is, it's a poses a different challenge to the players. I think they know they have to play a different kind of football when it's Walcott, but when they have Giroud, it's not to say that they can be lazy, but I think they know that they can get themselves out of trouble by just banging it up to Giroud, and they can't even really try that when Walcott's playing. So the whole team is sort of developing at the moment with these slightly different options and new ways of playing.
All right. Well, it's healthy, and so long as they stay healthy, it'll remain that way, I think. So, look, let's move on to what was happening at youth level, and you were there to watch the young guys beat Bayern Munich 2-0, hanging out with Ian Wright.
Wow, rude not to.
Was he there in a work capacity, or was he just there to watch the game?
He wandered down because he wanted to check it out, and good for him, you know.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, isn't it?
One of the nice things about the club, that people still want to see what's going on, and he's, you know, makes no bones about the fact that he's an Arsenal man, and I think he wanted to go and see how the boys were getting on against a really interesting opponent in Bayern Munich at youth level.
Mm.
But is anybody who lives in the area, highly recommend it. It was fantastic. It's free. It's not even one penny to go and watch the under-19s in their Champions League matches. So get yourselves down to Boreham Wood. It's great fun, good atmosphere. Stand on a terrace. Highly recommended.
All right. Well, look, you wrote a piece then following that, talking about Thierry Henry, and we know that he's there doing his badges, and some interesting words from Andreas Jonker, saying it's his ambition to invest in his own future as a coach. I've started to work with him and found out he's really, really motivated to developing himself as a coach. And I was listening to Football Weekly this week, and you were talking about something that occurred to you, and you weren't saying that this was what was going to happen, or nobody had mentioned that to you, but the idea of Thierry Henry as manager of Arsenal at some point in the future. I mean, what's the feeling about what Henry is doing at youth level? Alex Iwobi, his quote was like, I've learned from coaches, and all due respect to them, none of them are Thierry Henry, so I'm learning from the best. So there's an element of his reputation rubbing off on those young players.
Absolutely, but I also think from Thierry Henry's point of view, the reputation is almost not what he's interested in. He really wants to know if he's got it as a coach, and that's nothing to do with what he was like as a player, and everything to do with his communication of ideas and skills and tactics, techniques, you name it, pressure, how to deal with everything to the players. I think he's really enjoying the opportunity. I like the fact that Andreas Jonker said that he's doing more than he needs to do for his coaching badges. I think there are certain requirements that you have to fulfill in order to tick that box as part of the coaching criteria. But Thierry wants to be, yeah, he's obviously got his media commitments, but around that, he wants to be at the club working with the young players more or less as much as he physically can. So that tells you something about it. And Thierry, I think what interests me is Thierry as a guy is someone who is in his nature to, you know, to really want to try his best to be the best, or to be as best as he can be.
Yeah.
And I think that was evident in his playing career, and I suspect that that's a driving force in what he does, or what he wants to attempt to find out how much he wants to do in coaching.
Yeah.
Does he feel confident in himself that he can become a good enough coach to be operating at the top level? And I suspect that's really a lot of what all this is about. Yes, he's doing what he's got to do to get his badges, but it's also he's challenging himself in the experience, and we'll go away and have a think and probably a talk with Arsene and various other people that he respects or that he's working with along the way, just to suss out, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it properly. And, you know, am I right for it? It was very, he looks pretty relaxed. I mean, obviously it's not a high pressure at the moment with the under-19s. It's about developing players and not so much about results, but you know, out there in his Arsenal tracksuit on the pitch before the game, giving the players little words of advice here and there. He looks the part, but he looks very relaxed with it. And Iwobi was saying that he, you know, has a laugh and a joke with him, but he definitely knows when to be serious as well.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, when I proposed this notion that I think that he might one day be, you know, our Arsenal manager, that's, I have to stress, that's just based on absolutely nothing that I've, other than my own imagination. So I would imagine people coming around to me going, oh, what an idiot, thinking that possibly in a few years' time. But, you know, it's just a thought that's based not just on what I think he's potentially capable of doing, but the esteem that the club hold him in. And whatever happens when the time comes that Arsene decides he no longer feels it's right for him to be the Arsenal manager, it's going to be very, very difficult for anybody to walk straight into that role.
Yeah.
Which is where I wonder whether having someone like Thierry, who, if he fulfills his badges and is ready to take a step up and maybe work with the first team for, you know, another year or so and see how that develops, it might be an appropriate time. And I think from the club's point of view, an appropriate person to hand over the baton.
Big shoes to fill.
Yeah, but I don't think Thierry would be frightened of that.
And interesting stuff happening then at youth level as well. Some youth coaches, Ryan Gary, who was a former player as well, has worked his way up along. He was doing, I think, under 13s, wasn't he? And he's moving on up the levels there. And Liam Brady back to keep an eye on some of the players who are out on loan.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been quite a lot of changes over the past couple of years in youth development. Obviously, when Andres Jonker came in, it was somebody very new after a long time with the same setup. And naturally, he's going to have his own ideas. Some of them are probably going to be quite different to what's happened before. And I don't think it's been the easiest period of transition. You know, some people find it a big challenge when they're asked to do things differently. He's a straight talking Dutchman, so you know, you're in the typical way of the Dutch. You're either going to be happy to talk straight back, or some people might get rubbed up the wrong way. So I think it's been a bit of a challenging period all round. But you know, Arsenal have to have the courage of their convictions in moving forward to making the youth development the best it can be. And they know that in Arsene Wenger they have a manager who will promote the young players he believes in, albeit with those Silvino passport moments or whatever you want to call it, for the opportunities to come knocking. And I think that's something that even when Arsene does eventually hand over to the next manager, that they'll want to sustain. I think that's part of what, when Ivan Gazidis, whenever he talks about Arsenal, which we presume is on behalf of Stan Kroenke, you get the feeling that they've got certain strands of the development of the club, and of, you know, buying the best, recruiting the best players that they can is part of it, and promoting from within is a very strong part of it as well. And I think they'll want to keep that as strong as possible moving forward.
Interesting stuff all around, and an interesting week. And let's hope it continues in this very nice, interesting way. Amy, great stuff as always.
Cheers, Andrew.
Always fun to talk to Amy. You know where to find her on Twitter, at AmyLawrence71. At AmyLawrence71. Make sure you give her a follow. We've got a game against Everton coming up tomorrow. Yeah, tricky game after what we did in midweek. Are we tired? Are we injured? Are we what? We'll get team news and all that kind of stuff coming up in a few moments' time. But right now, a bit of this.
Join us as we take another enchanting adventure into the world of the angriest man on Twitter.
Oi, Winger! What is going on? You started this season in fine style with a 2-0 defeat to West Ham. Then our European adventures, or should I say misadventures, against Dinamo Zagreb and Olympiacos suited me down to the ground. But now we're beating Manchester United with scintillating, exciting, pacey football, and then you go and beat Bayern Munich, only the best team in Europe, at home to keep your Champions League hopes alive. You are making it very difficult for me to be angry. And that makes me so angry!
Next week, another Madcap Laugh-A-Minute romp with the angriest man on Twitter.
Everything is shit!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. There you go. Welcome back. So, no rest for the wicked, or indeed for Arsenal. A game against Everton this weekend, then there's Capital One Cup next week, and there's it's just football all the time until the next interlull, of course. But getting into that interlull in good shape is going to be important. We've lost two players who won't be back until the far side of the next international break. David Ospina, he missed the game against Bayern Munich, having returned from international duty with Colombia with a shoulder injury, which means he's not going to play until late November, apparently. And Aaron Ramsey, of course, who did his hamstring against Bayern Munich the other night after about an hour, having run his hole off against Bayern and run his hole off against Watford. Something had to give, and unfortunately, it was his hammy. So he's out as well until after the international break. So what does the manager do in terms of his solution to that? Because he is going to have to manage his squad, whether we like it or not, whether you say you've got to put your best team out every single game. The reality is, if you do overplay players, or if they're playing too regularly or don't have the right rest in the middle, then you're going to pick up injuries like Ramsey's. So options for the right-hand side. Obviously, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain was the man who was thrown on against Bayern the other night. So he seems the obvious choice to do that. Whether he's going to dovetail with Bellerin remains to be seen. Theo Walcott, I wonder if he remains an option for the right-hand side, or if he's just going to use Walcott as a central striker from now on. Because what he could do, obviously, is play Olivier Giroud as the main striker and use Walcott from the right-hand side and maybe use Oxlade-Chamberlain from the left if he needs to give Alexis a rest. Because he did mention Alexis Sanchez after the Bayern game, and he said he pushes himself too much. And after the international break he had playing two games with Chile, he said it's too much. So he's obviously a hugely important player, and I'd be very surprised if he rested him for the game against Everton at the weekend. We do have 4 days between the fixtures to get people back up and running and get them massaged and everything else. It would be a surprise, but he is going to have to rest him for the Capital One Cup game. You know, you just can't go there and play Alexis and Ozil and these guys. You've got to rotate your squad a little bit to keep things fresh. But for Saturday, he's going to play Alexis, isn't he? From the left, he has to. As to the form he's in. Everton, coming into the game after a bad result against Manchester United, in some ways you might look at that and say, well, yeah, they're not in great form. That's good. On the other hand, though, we know what it's like losing 3-0. You really want to prove yourself in the next game. You redouble your efforts. You're super motivated. You're highly charged. And it's always a difficult game against Everton. As we know, last season was a particularly difficult game, but one that was brightened by the fact that we were sitting behind the NBC commentators and ended up all over American television, if you remember.
Apologies once again if you've heard any inappropriate language from behind us here at the Emirates Stadium, which may be offensive. Incidentally, we apologise for any language that may have offended that you might have heard in the background.
Sadly, I won't be there with my tiny friend to entertain the people of North America. But hey, that's just the way the cookie crumbles. But this game gives us a chance to go top of the table because there is the Manchester Derby taking place on Sunday, which should be quite tasty indeed. Looking forward to that. And if we can beat Everton, then we go top of the table for at least some hours, which is good. Start as you mean to go on kind of thing. You know, it'd be good to get up there. But it is going to be tough. We did put a lot into what happened on Tuesday night. There was a huge amount of effort and endeavour went into that game. So it's whether or not we can get the bodies fit and recovered and get the minds in the right place and motivated. You'd like to think at home, the way we've been playing, confidence and everything else that we take from recent results and recent performances, it should be enough to get us to 3 points. So let's keep fingers crossed for that. We will, of course, discuss that game on the Arsecast Extra on Monday. Myself and James will be here looking back over what happened at the weekend and looking ahead to the Capital One Cup game, whenever that is, Tuesday or Wednesday. Should have looked that up. But one of those days, we'll worry about that next week. So look, we'll leave it there for this week's Arsecast. Thank you very much indeed for listening. Remember, if you do like the show, you could give us a rating or a review on iTunes. That would be very much appreciated. I'll catch you on Monday with the Arsecast Extra. Back again with another Arsecast next week. Let's keep fingers crossed for 3 points. Come on, you Gunners. Until the next one, cheers. Bye-bye.
Hello? Yeah, I'm calling about my internet connection. I want to make a complaint. What is wrong with it? Well, just the other day, I was trying to go on my favourite racism forum, and it took ages for the page to load. I got so bored I had to make do with some mild racism from the Daily Mail instead. Frankly, this is not acceptable. Well, I don't think that kind of attitude is right. I would go so far as to say that your internet service is weak and naive. I mean, what I say, it is weak and naive. Yes, I know what those words mean. Yes, I am a Chelsea fan. How do I do that then? Do you have a manual I can download? Why would I need a manual to go and fuck myself? Oh, you think you're so smart. You're weak and naive, and if I ever get hold of you, I'll... Hello? Hello? Now I feel weak and naive.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.